Hi, this is G. This is the second part of the episode on the Chinese banking sector. In this part, we will answer the following question: how did the bank exposure to shadow banking evolve? And what is the government plan for the banking sector and what effect can we expect from it? Hope you enjoy it. What is the banking sector risk considering shadow banking and other kind of financing? What is shadow banking? Shadow banking is not the banks that went on the other side of the force.
If you only knew the power of the dark side.
But simply, the financing that doesn't come directly from banks. According to an analysis performed by the Financial Stability Board, the shadow banking is a significant part of China's economy's financing. Using the total social financing data, which measure different financing sources of the economy, we can see that the core shadow banking has been decreasing in later years. The core shadow banking is composed by intercompanies loans, trust loans, and banker acceptance, which are all three traditional non-bank loans. Their contribution to new shadow banking was at 4% in March 2016, whereas it was at 30% 2 years before. Looking only at the total social financing data, you would conclude that the shadow banking is decreasing. However, a very different picture appears when you start to take into account the wealth management products, which are not counted in the total social financing. Wealth management products are structured investment products which collect funds and invest in assets. The amount of funds invested in wealth management products has steadily increased from 16% of the TSF in 2012 to 40% in 2015. Banks are increasingly using this channel for their financing. On the asset side, some banks are creating complex financial arrangements labeled as investment assets in order to structure loans as a financial investment. In practice, they're transferring funds to financial vehicles, which then loans to corporation. Doing this is advantageous, since banks can avoid having to increase the capital, as the capital requirement for loans is higher than the capital requirement for investment assets. This kind of financing structure represents 16.5% of the regular bank loans at the end of 2015, and is increasing by 63% year on year. Some of the middle-sized banks use these techniques extensively. A striking example is industrial banks, the 7 biggest Chinese banks by assets. In March 2016, industrial banks had more investment assets on its balance sheet than regular loans. The central bank has reacted to these developments by requiring in April 2016 the same level of capital for the loans and the so-called investment assets. One of the big challenges that we face studying banking risk is that we don't have much data to evaluate the level of NPL for loans classified under investment assets. Conclusion: it is hard to have a clear picture of the Chinese banking system due to its complexity and the lack of data. The core shadow banking has decreased while wealth management product has been developing at a very fast pace. On the asset side, many middle-sized banks have used extensively financial instruments to provide loans. Overall, I have to admit that it is hard to conclude on the level of risk in the banking sector. However, the level of risk is high enough for the government to implement a restructuration plan. Next, our last question: what are the details of the government restructuration plan and what can we expect from it? In order to reduce the risk in the banking sector, the government has unveiled guidelines of a restructuration plan and encouraged the development of loan securitization program. The government has unveiled on October 10, 2016, guidelines for restructuration of the banking sector, allowing a debt-to-equity swap. What is a debt-to-equity swap? It is a restructuration consisting for a bank to abandon the loan made to a company in exchange for a share of the ownership in the company. China's leaders have made cutting the country's debt level an economic priority this year, and Premier Li Keqiang first floated the swap idea in March 2016. But the proposal was met with heavy resistance from the banking executive, who says that the move could saddle banks with near worthless stock and squeeze their liquidity. While top economic advisors have warned against the risk of using this swap to maintain non-profitable SOEs, aka zombies companies, alive. The guideline release appears to have addressed those concerns. The government won't force banks to swap debt for equity for heavily indebted companies with no hope of surviving. China Development Bank, one of the three Chinese policy banks, has made the first call and announced on the 16th of October 2016 that it has abandoned the loan made to two state-owned enterprises in exchange for ownership in the company. Let's reflect a little bit on the consequences of such reform as an economist would do. What will be the consequences of such reform? First, it will reduce the short-term pressure of Chinese indebted companies that benefit from the restructuration, and it will reduce the level of NPL with the cost of losses carried by banks. This is not so bad. However, the incentives are not quite optimal. Indeed, the banks with ownership in a company has more incentive to be complacent with an underperforming company that doesn't meet its loan repayments. The banks which own share of an underperforming company will be tempted to roll over the loan to this company, which is not a healthy behavior. One can object that such incentive already exists since most of the corporate loans are extended by state-owned banks to state-owned companies. As always in China, it would be wiser to wait to see how this plan is implemented. The second action that has been implemented is to develop loan securitization. The government has granted beginning of 2016 a quota of 50 billion yuan or 7.5 billion USD to 6 banks to issue asset-backed securities, ABS. What is the recipe to create an ABS? You first put a lot of loan in a pool, and then you sell share of the pool of loans. In probability, some loan will default, but that is okay, as far as they don't default all at the same time. Creating and selling ABS to investors allows to distribute default risk in the economy outside of the banking industry. You are probably thinking, wasn't the ABS, CDO, CDS, all those three latest financial products that have contributed to a large extent to the financial crisis in 2008? And you'll be right. However, I wouldn't be so worried for China, as the amount of securitization is small, and the complexity of the product is low. Conclusion. In order to tackle the risk in the banking sector, the government has started to implement a restructuration plan allowing a debt-to-equity swap in the banking sector. This plan will alleviate pressure on corporates, but has potential negative incentive for the lending sector. At the same time, the government is also encouraging the development of loan securitization in order to better distribute risk in the economy. Let's summarize. The NPL level in the Chinese banking sector has increased in later years. The Chinese level of NPL is actually low by international comparison. However, this is due to a large extent to the difference in accounting standard that tend to underestimate the level of NPL in China. Other risk measurement methods indicate that the level of risk in the sector is actually high. In parallel of increasing risk, the profit in the banking sector has decreased. These evolutions are due to the slowdown of the industrial activity and to the increase in competition triggered by the interest rate liberalization and the development of money market funds. It is overall hard to conclude on the level of risk in the banking sector because of the complex financing structure, the development of new products in the shadow banking, and the lack of data. However, the level of risk is high enough for the government to implement a restructuration plan for the banking sector and to encourage the development of loan securitization. Although the banking restructuration plan will have short-term relieving impacts on the level of risk, the potential negative long-term impact shouldn't be underestimated. A further study of the implementation of the restructuration plan is needed. Number 49, it's my turn to see the financial counselor. After 5 minutes, she told me that the minimum amount to invest was 50,000 yuan, a bit less than 7,000 euros. Well, I don't have this amount of money on my Chinese bank account. End of the story. Yeah, a different city every night. Oh, I swear the world better prepare for when I'm a billionaire. Yeah, I would have a show like Oprah. I would be the host of everyday Christmas. That was China Commit Podcast. Today, I have some suggestion of good reading resources on Chinese economy, and here's my top 3. First, you should subscribe to China Economic Watch of the Peterson Institute of International Economics, where you could read updates on articles by Nicolas Lardy and his peers. If you do that, you'll be probably interested to read Michael Pettis' blog. You can subscribe on it, but Michael Pettis has to let you subscribe, and I tried, but he never replied. So, Michael, if you listening to the podcast, please let me in on your subscription list. Well, both publications are insightful. The second suggestion would be to read Andrew Batson's blog. Andrew is a research director at Dragonomics, an independent research office that produces very interesting research on Chinese microeconomy. Third, you can also subscribe to SubChina newsletter, where you will receive updates on Chinese news, and this is quite a useful tool that I use to get daily updates. Finally, this is a bonus one only for the French listeners. You can subscribe to the Bulletin Économique Chine on the French Embassy website. It is free. It is a publication produced by the French Treasury, where you will have microeconomical updates, studies done by the Treasury. Before I left, I produced a detailed report with two other colleagues on the Chinese banking sector. So if you want to have more details on today's subject, you can refer to this publication. Thank you very much and see you on the next episode on the Chinese zombie economy. A different city every night.